Yesterday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the United States. This annual holiday is set aside to honor the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Many during these days have undertaken to talk about Dr. King's passionate pursuit of justice and equality. Those reflections are beautiful and necessary. I leave those to others for this year, because as I've considered his legacy this year, I've been thinking about the themes of courage and power. And that's what we are going to be talking about today. Welcome to the Covenant Weekly Podcast, Episode 2. Many people are familiar with some sound bites from Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech that he delivered on August 28, 1963, from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. In this speech, Dr. King is noted for his courage in imagining a reality that was different than the one he lived in. He embodied courage as he invited 200,000 plus people present on that day, and millions who have heard or read his words since, to imagine that same reality. Having the courage to imagine and speak out about a reality that cannot be seen yet is remarkable. Others among us are familiar with his letter from a Birmingham jail, which was written in response to criticism of his nonviolent direct action. This criticism was directed at him by a group of white clergy. In this letter, he offers a rationale for the actions of those protesting by pointing out hard facts about the world that African Americans experienced. He spoke truth to power, saying things that others were not aware of and most did not want to hear. An example of this is heard in a 1968 speech describing the disparity between what African Americans were told and what, quote, immigrants from Europe were given. Here's a short clip of Dr. King speaking truth to power only a short time before his assassination.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Speaking the truth about injustice and equality takes courage. Notice that he's not attacking individuals here. He is actually not begrudging the opportunities the European settlers received as they moved to the land. He's pointing out that they are being given incredible opportunities, while African Americans are being removed from the land and being told to figure it out themselves. His efforts were not to diminish the opportunities of others. It was that they would be offered to all. But the non-courageous imaginations of those who had privilege couldn't see it that way. His speaking truth about the circumstance was heard as an attack on those with privilege. And this kind of speaking takes courage. It can be, as Dr. King's experience demonstrated, extremely costly. But for me, the greatest courage that Dr. King showed was not in his imagining a world that could not be seen. It was not in speaking truth to those with privilege. It was in a deep commitment to living a radically different way of being than what those who opposed him could imagine. In his letter from a Birmingham jail, he describes the steps that were involved before any direct action was taken. There were four steps. First, collection of the facts to determine whether injustices are alive. Second, negotiation. Third, self-purification. And fourth, direct action. Collection of the facts allows truth to be spoken. Negotiation is rooted in hope that the reality that they dream of could come to fruition. The fourth step, direct action, is meant to put pressure on others to hear the truth and come to the table to negotiate. But the third step is the most courageous of all, self-purification. In that letter, Dr. King describes how this process played out for them collectively before any direct action was taken. He wrote, "We were not unmindful of the difficulties involved, so we decided to go through a process of self-purification. We started having workshops on nonviolence and repeatedly asked ourselves the question, are you able to accept blows without retaliating? And are you able to endure the ordeals of jail?" They checked their motives and their deep commitment to acting in ways that did not escalate violence. They refused to respond to evil with evil, but rather committed to respond to evil with good. Checking their own hearts and committing to this way of being would take more courage than any imagining or truth-telling would. A vivid example of this kind of courage from Dr. King was on display more than a decade earlier, on January 30th, 1956. While King was speaking at an event, a man drove up to his house where Coretta, Dr. King's wife, was at home with their 7-month-old baby, Yolanda. This man jumped out, threw an explosive onto their porch, and drove off, leaving the house badly damaged. Thankfully, Coretta and Yolanda were physically uninjured. Dr. King rushed home when word of the bombing reached him, and by the time he arrived, an angry crowd was gathering and preparing to go and exact revenge. There, in the shadow of his damaged home, Dr. King called for peace and spoke these words. He said, "We believe in law and order. Don't get your weapons. He who lives by the sword will perish by the sword. Remember, that is what God said. We are not advocating violence. We want to love our enemies. Love them and let them know you love them. I want it to be known the length and breadth of this land that if I am stopped, this movement will not stop. If I am stopped, our work will not stop. For what we are doing is right. What we are doing is just. And God is with us." At that moment, Dr. King was in the midst of a civil rights battle that had involved centuries of abuse and oppression, and there seemed to be no way out of it. At that moment, Dr. King had a wife and daughter who had very nearly been killed because he had peacefully been advocating for equality. At that moment, he stood in the debris of a home that lay devastated by an act of violence towards him. At that moment, he had the power of an angry and violent crowd who had been pushed over the edge. They were at his disposal, waiting for him to point them in a direction where they could unleash a compiled centuries of pent-up sorrow, frustration, hopelessness, and anger. All the powers of the world were pushing for reaction and revenge. Instead, Dr. King took the greatest step of courage one could take at that moment and chose to love. And he chose the courage to call others to lay down their weapons and anger and fear and to pick up love. Undergirding all the dreams and all the speeches and all the truth-telling was a deep commitment to courageous love, even when it cost him his life. In light of all of this, I've been giving some thought to our ideas of power as it relates to courage lived out. Dr. King was never elected to political office. He used no weapons of violence, even when faced with those who had political power and state-sponsored weapons of violence being used against him. Instead, he held up imagination, spoke truth, and held love as his weapons of choice. Ultimately, his posture cost him his life, but it did not cost him his voice, and it did not end his cause. Had he led an army of revenge seekers in 1956 from the front porch of his house in search of retributive justice, Dr. King would have gone down in history as a relatively minor footnote, and the movement he was a part of may have stalled out. Instead, as others joined and continued to join in this work of justice, His work continues to roll down like waters, and righteousness like a mighty stream. As we live in our world today, what does courage look like for us? Does it look like yelling louder than others on social media? Does it look like us opposing measures that are designed to protect the vulnerable but cause us inconvenience? Does it look like correcting every choice of words that offends us? Or does it look like embracing and sharing the imagination of a world that is beyond what we can presently see? Imagining an upside-down world where the last shall be first, where humility and servanthood are the way of power, and where love wins. What does this look like for us? Does it look like fostering anger at those we don't like and doing whatever we can to defend our rights? Or does it look like the way of the cross, dying daily, taking up the cross, and following Jesus? What does this look like for us? Does it look like passive ignorance of injustice and brokenness in our world, looking the other way? Or does it look like seeking justice, loving mercy, and walking humbly with God? Dr. King is an example of imagination, of truth-telling, and of love all coming together in sacrifice. But he is not the first example, and he is not even the greatest example by any margin. His example is just a shadow of the example that we have in Jesus, one who told stories that sparked imagination for what the world was really like, who spoke truth about the heart of God, and who loved unconditionally and sacrificially. He is the one who embraces us with his love and invites us to follow him. Just a couple of reminders for this week. Remember, everything is online for the time being. So keep up with us at covenantchurch.ca. That's where you'll find any and all events and links that you need. Our board has a meeting tonight, and we welcome your prayers for us. Most importantly, be aware of some of the stuff going on with people in our Covenant family. Be praying for Dee as she has surgery today. And if you did not already see the message about it, Fran McNally passed away on Sunday after a short but aggressive battle with lymphoma. Please be praying for her family and for all of her friends who are grieving in these days. Lord God, help us to maintain a conviction and an imagination that recognizes that the pain and struggles of our world are not the end of the story, and they are not the ultimate story. Help us to be people of hope in and for the life to come, and may that hope bear fruit in our present life. May it be a comfort to the weary and worn and grieving. May it inspire courage in the afraid. May it open us up to hearing truth as we are quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. God, as we seek first your kingdom, may your love grow deeply in us and overflow to all with whom we engage. Amen. God bless. Go in peace.